shaky and stiff. I was in a fix, I'm telling you. I was afraid to get up. I was afraid to do anything. And I looked over and see my dogs. I said, that's it. So I spoke to my leader, and I said, come here, fella. And he come just tearing right to me, you know, and around this hole, of course, that I'd broke out. And then I got him to me, and he licked my face, and I said, mush on, and started him across the road. And the rest of my dogs come by me and got my sled to me. And then I got hold of the handlebars and got on my seat. I'm on my feet. But, boy, I was scared. Well, I went on to the other side, which was no better a bit than the one I'd been coming on. But I thought it was going to be, so it was all right. But while I was sitting there, I took off my snow glasses so I could see well and see better, of course. And went on across, and, well, I was just worried and more scared than ever then, afraid the ice was going out. So I went on down the other side, which I believe was a little better. And I got out. I think it was 3 miles through. And when I got out, I hadn't put back on my snow glasses. And I knew I was going snowblind. And I knew what that was because I'd been snowblind before. So I put my dogs out where I spotted them. I knew where they was. There's only one thing to do to snowblindness. That's put tea on it, tea leaves on it. And get in the dark if you can. And, well, I always turned my leader loose. So I tied all my dogs up with my leader so I'd know where they was because I knew what was going to happen. And made me some tea leaves for a start. And fed my dogs and got under my canvas. Well, if I didn't have a time for about 3 days, but for that entire 3 days that I was there, I don't think there was 1 hour out of the 24 hours that my leader didn't come there and scratch on that canvas. I'd speak to him and he'd go away. Another hour or so, he'd be back. But boy, that was really something. But when I hooked him up to get out of there, I think that is the ticklest dog team I ever hooked up. Of course, they'd had a nice long rest, 3 days of long rest for him, and they was ready to get out. But not too soon, because I got into Hazelden, and the ice went out just a day or two afterwards. And, of course, the mounted police were there looking for me, and I was quite a bit late. And they gave me a royal welcome, and I stayed there for a couple of days before I went on, because the snow was all gone, and I knew I had to do something about getting wheels on to come on with my sled. Muddy, dirty, boy, everything in that sled. Well, there was a Mountie out to meet me and just looking for me. He said every day he'd rode out, he had a horse, and rode out. It was about 6 or 7 miles to where the river left the trail left the river. And he said he rode out every day. They've been expecting for the last 2 or 3 weeks. But it was sloppy. You know how sloppy it can get when it's thawing and the snows are leaving and it's just about all pulled on bare ground. And that muddy mud like you get up there. Well, he took me to his cabin and they had a barn there. And I put my dogs out and they fed them. And one of them got me some dry clothes and nothing was getting me something to eat. And nothing went over after my mail. There's a mail post office there. He come back with a whole handful of mail, and, well, I was busy talking to them, of course, and just stuck it in my pocket, and went on and got something to eat, and we was talking, and one of them said, Slim, did you get any good news in your mail? Well, I said, I don't know, I haven't looked. And you know, I opened a letter, I pulled out a letter out of that bunch, and there was a check there from McDonald for $50. He said he just thought I might need it when I got there. By gee, I did need it. I didn't have over $3 or $4, getting pretty short of the money. But out of that of me, I never think of those things. And but that $50, and then, of course, I got along all right after that. But there's no bank there. And with that $3 or $4, I went over to get it and went over to the barber shop. Well, sir, I got up in that chair. I'd never thought. Now, it'd been about 7 or 8, I don't know how long, 6, 7, 8 months since I'd shaved or cut my hair or anything. And sitting by a smoke fire, you know, all that time. And was the hardest looking cuss I think I ever met up with. That shaggy long hair, a beard all tangled, and just as black as it could be. You'd just say I was colored, that's all there was to it. I'll swear I didn't know myself. And they give me a shave and a haircut, and I went over to the restaurant to get something to eat. And that's the first I found out that I needed glasses. Now, before that, I'd been able to read anything without glasses. My eyes never bothered me at all. But that snow blindness had put them on the bum. And I couldn't read typewritten letters at all. I just couldn't see them. That's all there was to it. So I got the little gal there to tell me what it was. And doctor come along. And he knew something about glasses. And so he just insisted that he'd get me a pair of glasses. So he did. He went over and dug me up a pair of glasses, wouldn't judge me anything for him. Boy, them fine people, them Canadian, them mounted police just can't be beat. That's all there was to it. Well, there was just nothing in Hazleton that I could use. I knew I had to have wheels on, but there was just nothing there to, nobody to do anything. So I had to go to the next town, wasn't Prince George, we looked that up. But it was about 20 miles. And I just was wearing out the sled, I knew I was, so I put some green birch, lashed them on the bottom, cut the green birch and trimmed them slick, and wired them on for runners. And that pulled easier than iron did. And so when I got to this little town there and found a place to put my money, helped me again, found a place to put my dogs in, and we got some Model T Henry wheels, the front wheel of a Ford, the old Ford, about a 3-inch tire, and we cut off the axle till it fit just run as wide as the sled. Well, I put a handle back next to mine and a rod run to the gear in front and rigged it up so when I was turning a corner I could hold them straight either way until I turned the corner, you know, it wouldn't track with my dogs like my sled did. So I'd hold them wheels until they would be straight until I'd get far enough where I could turn them loose. And then I'd turn them loose and we'd make the corner. But I think everybody in that little town come to see my dogs. Lord, there were dozens of them. And of course, those wolves are strictly one-man dogs. That's all there is to it. You talk about a one-man dog, but you don't know what they are until you get a hold of those wolves. They just won't have anything to do with anybody else. Or they hadn't up until this. And the time I was there, I thought everybody in town had come to see my dogs at least 3 times. And I was over there one day, and a little old lady come in. I don't know, she must have been maybe 60. A little bitty gal, and very timid. And everybody else that come in, the dogs would get just far away from as they can, and I had a rope fixed up so they couldn't get too close. And but so this lady come in, and oh, she says, what beautiful dogs. She said, I didn't get a chance to see them yet. And she said, oh, it's so nice of you to show them to me. And I took her over, and you know, those dogs was right, every one of them, wolves and all, right out on the chain, just like I was alone, coming right to her, anxious to get to her. And she walked right up, and she petted every dog in that bunch. And they had just wiggled their tail. It was the tickliest dog to see that little woman that I ever seen. I never figured out, but you can't figure out a dog anyhow. Well, from there I started out with my wheels. And that muddy mud, they balled up until I just had, well, they just clogged up against the sled. I believe it was a foot across. And times I'd just have to stop and cut that mud off with an axe, just pry it off and get it off the sled so they could pull it at all. It'd just simply get stuck. That's all there was to it. Well, come on down the old Caribou Trail, and I kept getting better, of course, all the time, and people was always just as good. And I had dates at least 3 or 4 days ahead. Some farmer would send me word, I don't know how, but I'd get a word, somebody'd come to me and say, well, such and such a place, they've got dog feed for you and want you to stay all night. And I would do it. And boy, that was awful nice. But when I got to Williams Lake, that was it. They have the Dukhobors there. They're Russian. And they have that funny religion. They're somewhat nudist. And they won't pay taxes. They won't fight. I can explain it to you maybe when I talk to you, but it's hard now. But they just won't do anything. They only just farm. They're good farmers. They got about 1,000 of them over there a long time ago. Oh, 20, 30 years ago. And they've just had to bust them up, and they've had an awful time with them ever since. Have trouble with them every year. Well, it seemed that this fella had come in to market with a load of wheat. And they had met him and took tax out of the wheat. And that made him mad. So he just pulled off his clothes and went downtown. Well, they arrested him for indecent exposure and put him in jail. And the rest of them out there heard it. So they all just pulled off their clothes, about 250 of them, mind you, and come to Williams Lake. And that was the darndest mess I ever seen. I stayed there for 2 days just looking at them. There wasn't anything to look at either. There was the poorest shaped woman. They was, I don't know. They looked more like animals, really, than they did women. There was nothing beautiful about them, that's a sure thing. But they were all mad, and it was all downtown, and I drove off, left them there naked. I don't know what they ever finally done with them. Well, I hit the States. Do you ever get that name? But I hit Spokane, Washington. And there my brother from California met me. And, of course, I hadn't seen him for years. And he thought that anybody up in that country must be nuts. And so he traveled with me from there clear to Washington, D.C. And, gee, that was a help, too, because he'd go ahead and find me a place to stop. Well, still the people ahead would send word back a week ahead. And Chambers of Commerce would send the word. Of course, all the papers was full of it all over the country. And they'd send me word that I could camp in their park. Well, I had to be right with my dogs all the time. So I couldn't go to a hotel, and I just happened to, just had to stop with them. So I would unhook my dogs in the park and take my rope, and I had plenty of it, bought some more, in fact, so I could have rope, and put it around so people couldn't get too close to my dogs or they couldn't get over 20, 30 feet from them. And you know, it wasn't long till my leader learned not to go under that rope. He'd go as far as that rope, and I'd say, "Brant, back." And he'd go back and lay down. He wouldn't go under that rope. So it wasn't long until I could lay right down among them and go to sleep. And one day my brother said to me, he said, "Tell me why it is." He said, "Those dogs can just make all..." Well, he once thought they must be something the matter with me living up there in that country like that all the time. And I could see that he was just wondering what kind of a crackpot I was, how I was cracked, and what about it. And I think he thought it was whiskey, but he found out I didn't drink. And then he got kind of got it in.